You're now live.
Good evening, everyone. I call this Lane Transit District Board of Directors Budget Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, October 5th, 2022. My name is Carl Gate. I am the chair. We will do a quick roll call to see which members are here. Let's start with people in the room. Michelle Weber.
Here.
Susan Cox.
Here.
Don Norton.
Here.
Caitlin Barty.
Here.
Kelly Sutherland. Gina Grimaldi.
Here.
And moving on to people online, Pete Dock.
Here.
Thanks, Pete. Steven, we are not here yet. Jeff, go chat.
Here.
Thanks, Jeff. And Brandon Rogers decided to make it. Oh, I'm sorry. Sherry Wallace is right there. And Jason Williams.
Here.
Gary Wallace. Here. I was going off the list now. apologies to those two. With that, let's go ahead and move to comments from the general manager.
I know many. I just want to thank the community members and board for being here. This is an important part of our process. It's been a significant amount of funds on our capital program, the tenure program, and so your input is valuable and we appreciate it as well.
Thank you so much for those comments. Next, we'll move on to audience participation. And I'm checking with the board first. Do we have anyone who wants to make comments there?
I am not showing anyone indicating they would like to speak. Thank you, Paul.
Great. Excellent. Well, thank you for that. Let's go ahead and go straight to the items for action.
I also want to thank you for being here to provide your input on our annually updated community benefit plan. This is for the 2023 through 2032. It's the 2023 through 2032 community benefit plan. And basically tonight I will be asking for your approval of this plan. It was posted for public comment on September 28th. So it was posted on our LP website, and we are taking public comment between now and when it's actually adopted. I will start by playing a video which summarizes all of the different projects that are included in our plan. And then the directors are here to answer any of your questions about the project. So each of the directors that own the project, they'll be able to answer the questions that you might have. After they answer all your questions and you have a chance to have a discussion, I'll be asking for your approval of the CIP, either as presented or with any recommended changes. If you have changes that you're recommending, I will be taking those to the board and for their direction. And the CIP is the prioritized list of what we really want to do. And during the budget process, we determine what we are actually able to do and what we can allocate to these projects. This particular CIP that we're reviewing today is preliminary. And between now and when we have the final, I will do a bridge. So when we meet again in April, I will be able to provide you a bridge between whatever you approve today and whatever it is in the final. And I'll also be aligning the current year project with our fiscal year 24 budget. So if there's anyone have any questions before we start. Okay. Neil, can you play the video, please? Pardon me.
Is there volume right now?
Apologies, the audio wasn't picking up. Bear with me. It also allows us to stretch our dollars to maximize our benefits in communities with both the mining industry, state, and county goals. LCD wide business includes our community, including the problem beyond what is expected. The district works overtime to coordinate businesses off the state in order to continue service. Prevent injustice and trophy for communities in an international violence during the World Climate Crisis. We all work on quickly to evacuate open strategy during the Cedar Creek fire and continue to provide essential services for transit to communities, allowing them to get jobs, medical, shopping, school, and social services. In addition to servicing our riders, our facilities serve as a community hub. Allowing easy access to COVID-19 vaccines at our transit. Our investments are intended to maintain and improve the value and benefits transit provides to our community. The projects showcased here are a few examples. In the next few slides, I will provide more detail on these important projects. The projects will be paid for mostly for one project, which means that full funding for these projects have been secured. Here are two products for those who have identified where the earnings will be coming from, but we are still in the process of securing that funding. Only projects that have been unsort identified can be planned for year 1 through 3. Here are three projects represent LED looking out in the future community for needs. Similarly, our Lions continue to replace the books each year. Identifying and recognizing future needs allows the district to rapidly plan for and ensure we are securing funding for this project. PCIA includes a number of modernization efforts. One significant one is the modernization of the 25-year-old state, which is our busy station and the central point of our hub and spoke terminal. Modernization will benefit existing buyers, attract new buyers, and enhance the quality of life for our centrally located citizens as a part of downtown community. Some improvements as part of the modernization are updating wayfinding signs to improve system safety within the community, improving real-time signage to enhance customer experience, installing energy-efficient lighting fixtures, which reduce the cost of operations and improve driver safety, and updating public restrooms that provide an important and convenient public service for community members of all ages in the building, while renovating surrounding businesses. To leverage our local funds to the extent possible, these improvements will apply to $1 million. That will be funded 8% by federal funds and 20% by local funds. The project addresses our strategic priorities of community value, customer satisfaction, and employee engagement. CAD ADL stands for Computer Aided Dispatch Automatic Vehicle Engagement. This system is a core part of our daily operations. This project is to replace our antiquated IML system to replace it with a modern system that seamlessly interacts with other operational software, including scheduling, service planning, error collecting, and recommendations. This upgrade will provide many brighter benefits, including a reduction in service disruption and real-time vehicle location information that leads directly into Google Maps, our LED website, and Google Maps.
CAD ADL project also includes an onboard video surveillance system that will increase driver and rider safety. Like the previous project, this project will be funded 80% by federal funds and 20% by local funds. MX is short for Emerald Express, which is the district's bus rapid transit system, also known as the ERP system. The ERP system provides speed, reliability, and frequency of hybrid with the possibility and simplicity of a bus. The district's ERP system comprises 35% to 25% of our riders, which is the highest priority of the system. ERP is also unique in that it affects two cities, Eugene and Springfield. The state is an important part of the greenhouse gas emission solution and to provide a competitive, reliable alternative to a private vehicle. Because the system is heavily utilized, provides high community value, continually improving safety, coverage, and frequency is a high and important priority. I have featured three projects along our frequent transit network corridor. These projects are the MX Strengthening Gateway Safety Improvements, the Great Embrace Project Roundup, and the FPN Safety and Amenities Improvement Project. The $2 million MX Strengthening the Gateway Station Improvement Project focuses on maintaining and improving the passenger boarding areas to ensure they are safe and accessible to all. The $5 million Franklin Race Project Program is helping these contributions to the $25 million joint project with cities of Keene and Springfield, along with Franklin Boulevard Opportunity Zone Program. This project will improve safety, add transit capacity, and create safe pedestrian and bicycle access to LPs and streets. The 4.5 million capsule safety and amenity improvement project will reduce the number of years collisions along all MX corridors through better signage, parking, and signal priority. This project will also improve comfort and accessibility with ADA improvements, bike lockers, and real-time signs. The MX Strengthening Gateway project has funded 80% by federal funds and 20% by local funds. The Franklin Grace project being funded 100% by local funds, which the board already approved in the June 2021 ordinance. FDN Safety and Amenity Improvement Project funded 90% from federal funds and 10% from local funds. you're on your way to work or to the office, when you drive carriages, you probably only think about going from A to go B. You are thinking about the plan maker, the CEO's investment that is required to get you there. Buses only have 12 journeys in line, which means to keep our system reliable, we must have a deep replacement plan. Our 10-year deep replacement plan goes beyond ensuring our buses are running water. And the sustainability is part of our business. Our plan is also focused on improving air quality in our region, to be part of the need to be helping people to replace 19 running the buses in the first year of the 10-year project. With those 19, 30% of our buses will be electric, which is up from only 13% today. In addition, LPD is exploring emerging technologies and alternative clean or renewable fuels with the goal of phasing out 100% of our fossil fuel fleet by 2035. At $88.3 million, or 30% of all investments, investment in our fleet is by far the largest in your investments. 95% of these projects tend to be from federal and state grant resources. They will be full center, also known as OCT project. They will be part of our cameras and operations. They will help with bus operations certain food remain, incident response, and from the bus dispatchers, including bus operators and public safety officers to ensure passenger safety. OCT allows supervisors to address issues and maintain cameras to spot service disruption, traffic, construction, emergencies, and panel. In addition to an updated operations dispatch, update also includes heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems to mitigate the spread of contamination. A separate training room was facility this offer as well as upgrades to the wellness center to effectively protect health and employees. Updates to the training area include installation of the train simulator, which will reduce training costs, improve everyday operations, and increase employee development, all of which will enable operators and sustain better service to the community. The district's operations and control center is located on the 98th Mountain, which was constructed 34 years ago in 1989. So it is well enough. This $12.5 million cost has been paid 80% of the federal costs with a 20% match for our local funds. It focuses on strategic priorities, community value, customer satisfaction, and employee engagement. Before we jump into the projects, I would like to share some context. LPD's standing projects vary in size and cost. They are classified as either improvements or standard repair. Improvement projects make the delivery of LPD services more efficient, safe, and sustainable, while improving the riders' experience and meeting the diversity of our growing community. Standard repair projects ensure that we are able to preserve our existing investments. Current projects have been vetted using the foundational elements included in our community investment policy. Those three foundational elements are aligned with our strategic business plan, meeting our funding goal of greater than 70% of our project costs being covered by grants, and our guiding principles. Our five guiding principles are: one, to deliver safe, equitable, and dependent transportation services and facilities in an affordable, efficient, and cost-conscious manner. Two, to invest in a transparent, financially sustainable manner that is able to withstand annual revenue fluctuations. Three, to address the changes in community service needs and strategic business plan priorities. Four, to comply with all the local, state, and federal regulatory requirements. And five, to be a part of the great case solution, building community resiliency. In the next few slides, I will focus on the projects that will occur within the next few years, as those projects are fully scoped and have funding secured or in progress. Projects beyond 3 years are included to ensure that we are considering, scoping, and planning for, especially from a financial and personnel resource perspective, the needs of these projects. An example of a 4-year plus horizon project is an alternative fuels infrastructure project. This project, aligned with our strategic priority of sustainability, is a key component to achieving the community's goal of becoming 100% fossil fuel free by 2035. But until the fleet procurement plan is finished, we will not know what the new vehicle propulsion technology is that our facilities will need to accommodate. It is included in the schedule because we know there will be a future need. Horizon projects may change the scope, finding our funding source, but as they come into the near term, details will become clearer. I will start with the facility projects. Facility project costs are for the design, purchase, installation, construction, and improvement of service, maintenance, and administrative facilities. This slide focuses on our facility improvements. I've covered 9% of the near-term spend projects, which are the OCC project and the Eugene Station Modernization project. Other notable near-term projects are the Ukraine Wall Protection project, which will allow a safe working environment on our new zero-emission buses, and the passenger boarding improvement project, which is to improve the rider experience. Passenger boarding improvements include several pathways and additional shelter, furniture, and signage. These are our facilities gated and repair projects. The key projects in this section are ongoing transit facilities gated and repair projects, which is regular maintenance of our buildings for the safety of our employees, customers, and community. The controlling fuel system project, which replaces our end-of-life fluid dispensing system, which is needed to ensure ongoing operation and environmental protection. And the bus wash improvement project, which will replace a currently unreliable system with one that is reliable, using fewer people and other resources in order to use it and maintain it. All two or three facility improvement projects that are unfunded are horizon projects. And the scope of these projects is very fine. Grant money will be secured. The near-term projects we just discussed are funded 73% by federal grants and 27% by our local dollars. All two or three facility stated grid repair projects that are unfunded are also provided. The near-term projects are 53% funded by federal grants, 25% covered using local dollars, and 2% using state grants. The reason for the higher percentage of local dollars is because of a conscious decision not to use federal formula grant dollars for preventative maintenance starting in fiscal year 2026, so that those dollars will instead be utilized for major capital investments such as bus replacements. Providing reliable transit service requires that we consistently invest in the enrollment stock. As I mentioned earlier, fixed route vehicles are used for 12 years. The system will turn into the demand of response vehicles have an even shorter life, 5 to 8 years. I already covered the 10-year fixed route fleet replacement project, which comprises 77% of the investment over 10 years. Other notable investments are specialized early vehicle replacements, major bus components, fitment engines, and other major failing parts, and non-revenue vehicles. 68% of our fleet costs are covered by federal dollars, 24% are covered by state dollars, and 8% is paid for using local dollars. LPE's frequent transit network, also called FTN, provides service frequency of 15 minutes or less on weekdays with high quality amenities. This corridor is along the highest density area where the greatest need for housing exists. Together with our fixed route service, it creates an interconnected network of routes that provide frequent and broad transit community. LPD's approach to safety and security is critical to the community base. This means that our safety and security investments are one, to improve accessibility for low income and riders with disabilities, two, to increase public health, and three, to create a safe environment for all riders and the community. There are three FDN projects for the next 10 years. I already covered the Franklin Race project. Planning studies comprise interrelated studies that advise the strategic direction of the district. The near term planning studies include the maintenance-based transit moving ahead and every 3 years strategic business plan. There are two safety and security projects. I already covered in safe and amenity improvement project. The system security improvement project is to increase the safety and security for passengers, employees, facilities, and vehicles. As mentioned earlier, the Franklin Race project is a board-approved local funded map for a $25 million joint project with the city of PH Springfield. The remaining FTN and safety and security projects are funded 76% by federal dollars and 24% by local dollars. At the transit board approved further refining the scope, technology and infrastructure improvements provide tools for our employees and passengers that make our services reliable and easy to use. The technology and infrastructure state of the repair projects replace our maintenance system, many of which are being end of life by our partners. The two technology and infrastructure improvement projects provide tools to improve the rider experience to improve communication and better trip planning tools. These investments prepare our community for a multimodal service future. The largest of the state of river care projects in technology and infrastructure is the CAT-ADL project that I already covered. Other notable projects are the Enterprise Resource Planning for ERP project, which replaces our finance organization for 21 years. As a finance professional, I am excited about the operational efficiency that will result from this replacement. Operations Software Midas is also a project that replaces the accounting plans. The technology and infrastructure projects funded 76 through federal grants, 19% with local dollars, and 5% with state funds. I hope you have enjoyed learning about our strategy pilots. I look forward to seeing you at our budget committee meeting.
So now we invite you to ask questions about our projects and also to have a discussion.
And I mean, if it'd be helpful, all the directors are here, they can spend a little time talking about each of their projects and the importance of them. That was a pretty big overview and pretty quick. So if that would be helpful, we can have Joe and Matt kind of talk about them more.
I'd like to get the information on the funding.
Sure.
As I'm sitting here listening to this, it's going really fast.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about dimes and nickels.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the ones that she had mentioned, and you, Christine, you probably have this, that $25
million. Mm-hmm. Which project?
Well, there's a $25 million of federal grant money that's being spent on a certain area.
Okay, you're talking about the one with that's between Eugene and Springfield.
Right.
They're spending $25 million and we're doing a match. The Franklin Race Grant, is that what you're talking about?
See, that's the problem. I'm not sure. Let's go to facilities.
Okay.
Let's just take facilities and say what's the total of what's the match on facilities of the total?
Sure. So the MX Franklin and Gateway Station, that's 80% federal and 20% general fund. The Eugene Station Modernization, that's 80% federal and 20% general fund. The fleet,
I kind of got that. Most of these are 80-20?
The passenger boarding and systems facility improvement, that's 100% general fund. But what that is it's $200,000 per year over 10 years. And that's always been paid.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That.
Oh, okay.
That's it. That covers it.
All right.
Fleet.
Okay. Let's look at fleet. Let me go to the fleet page. All right. For fleet, we have the major one, which is the 10-year fixed route fleet replacement. That's 95% of both federal and state and 5% general fund. So you see that one there, the biggest portion of that is the $88 million.
Now, when you say 5% general fund,
mm-hmm.
is that different than?
That's the match.
Then I know, but is that different than local fund?
It's the same, local or general fund. I'm referring to them, I'm using the same I guess a different terminology, but it's the same thing. The dollars that we're generating locally from our tax dollars is what we're matching, that go into our general fund and that we use for match. Okay.
That's because I know that there were on the MX, we had funds on the MX in some of the match funds, I thought came from the state of Oregon under the.
Yeah. And so in this case, if you look at the, for example, the 10-year fixed route fleet replacement, the plan is that 95% would be, 67 million would be federal, right? And the match would be, we have a STIP formula as a match, right? So that is a state.
So you can use a STIP as the match.
A portion of the STIP was allocated already in the last biennium for match for some of the buses that were the fixed route buses. And so then the remainder is general fund. So you, it's exactly what you're saying there. We oftentimes will have a federal, and then we'll have some, we could have some state dollars that help with the match. And then we have the general fund that fills the gap between what's not covered.
And that's the thing that I get concerned with is the general fund.
Because
that's where the pressure is. At least I would think that could be the case.
Yeah.
But okay.
So our total plan for fleet is 68% is covered by federal, 24% is covered by state, and 8% is covered by the general fund. So that leverages a lot of our general fund dollars, right? Because the majority of
that's the fleet category.
That's what?
That's the
fleet. That's the fleet category, yes, that you're looking at. So you could kind of see it by looking, you could just eyeball it and you can see that the general fund amounts are very low compared to the federal and state amounts that are in there.
I think that's, now I have a sense for it.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Before we continue, I just want to say thank you, Christina, for that video presentation. I also wanted to acknowledge that Steve Wheeler had joined us right before the presentation started. And please raise your hands. I do see Jess. I'm going to call on you next. And I figure there'll be a lot more questions that will be coming. So go ahead, Jess.
Yeah, were the directors going to do little presentations? I didn't want to ask a question prematurely. Are we going to questions?
Go ahead to questions.
So a couple things, one of which I saw the fixed route fleet replacement on their big item. Do the EMX buses also have a replacement plan? And what is that? As far as I understand, they can't be electrified, but how long do they last? And what is the replacement plan on those guys?
Jess, great question. This is Matt, Director of Fleet. So absolutely, the MXs are included. The minimum useful life is 12 years on any type of asset like that. We look to stretch that a little bit more, but the MXs are included in that that fixed route replacement plan.
They are. Okay, so they're included in the fixed route fleet replacement line item.
It is, yes.
Okay, gotcha. And so I saw, maybe the directors can help clarify or somebody, I saw, I didn't see a lot of items related to fixed route station improvements or fixed route improvements other than the fleet. And I'm just wondering, you know, what percentage of our riders are not riding on the EMX?
I'm going to go off of what I heard Christina say. I think she said 40%-ish is what are on MX. So 60% would be on the other fixed route.
So one of my questions, I guess, for somebody, thank you for that, was quick information. The percentage of funding that we seem to be allotting towards the EMX, and of course, a lot of it's federal and state funding, is pretty great, but where on here are the fixed route service funding that we're going after?
I will pass that to, I see Joe's coming up. Thank you, Jess.
Yes. Hello. So actually, in year 26 and 27, we have a project to look at all of our fixed route stops. So non-MX, non-neighborhood station, non-major station, but actually just the bus stop and bench and small shelter on the route. So we have about 1,300 of those, and it is they are due for new signage rehab, and also in terms of our shelters, just rehabbing and rebalancing where those are at, making sure that we're actually serving the right stops with the right amenities. So there is a project focused just on those smaller stops. Is that the question you're getting at?
Yeah. I'm just kind of paging through looking for those dollar amounts and so forth. And I really want to make sure that the fixed route, you know, stops are getting the accessibility services, you know, people are able to access them. We're increasing the number of stops that are covered, you know, to stay out of the rain. They're nothing fancy, but maybe they have the covers. You know, if 60% of our people are riding fixed route, like, where are the amenities for people who never ride the EMX?
Sure. So I'll just point out the project I was speaking about on the fixed route infrastructure improvements. It's about $4 million over 2 years in FY26 and 27. And then we have ongoing improvement and state of good repair monies that are every year. So the $200,000 a year that Christina mentioned is outward facing, that's passenger facing improvements at the stops. And that's intended to do things like you mentioned, the ADA improvements for locations that need that, and then just a general care of those bus stops that are out there. So they are in a good state of repair, accessible, and depending on what the service is doing, that we actually have the ability to move those stops around to match where the demand is at.
And I think the Eugene and Springfield station modernizations are also, they aren't just for MX, so it's for all passengers, because a large percentage of our passengers do go through both the Springfield and Eugene stations.
Yeah, so we have 11 neighborhood stations, which are all fixed route primarily, and then the two hub stations, as you mentioned, Mark, significant amount of dollars being spent on those.
Yeah, I appreciate those answers. Thank you so much. And yeah. I don't know, maybe Mark can answer. Do we have data on what percentage of fixed route or any riders complete or at some point during their riding use the hubs that we're talking about, the you know, central downtown and or Hunsaker or whatever? Like, do the majority of our riders never get to those places because they're riding pieces, or do the majority of our riders, are they using those?
Yeah, and I can gauge the percentage, and Tom might know the percentage that actually go through. Yeah, we can get it, but I don't know right off the top of my head. But it's a high percentage that actually use our hubs, because we are a hub and spoke system. So, you know, to get many places, you do have to go to a station to get a connection.
Great. Jess, did you have another comment?
No, I want to pass it along so others
Okay.
can pass. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I had a follow-up comment, but I want to make sure, is there anyone else who wanted to get on cue? I think what I heard Jess saying was that there was maybe questions, not necessarily concern about how much we're allocating towards a fixed route versus MX, but I'm also just my familiarity with MX versus fixed route. I feel like it's really hard to compare them like dollar for dollar, because they're by nature very different kinds of services with different kinds of needs. You have one that has arguably a heavier load being placed on it because it's so frequent. And the other one is, well, less. But then also there are also, and I was going to compliment the plan for, you know, continuing on, because having served on the board before, that commitment to being fully fossil free by 2035. And it looks like you're still making great plans toward that. But I just wanted to mention that maybe someone else can comment even more about what some of the inherent differences between fixed stop and versus MX, and what their and why their needs, financial needs, might be a little different. Tom. So,
One of the things that we can come back with more specific information on is that FTA actually provide us funding for the mileage on our MX routes for that maintenance. And so that helps, because then we're not using other funds to support MX. We're able to use those funds for that purpose. And in fact, I think it's another couple of years. and will be so it's per mile after 7 years. So in a couple of years, we'll be able to start drawing on the West Eugene project miles and get that money going into preventative maintenance as well. So that's an important resource for us. Just good information.
Thanks, Tom. And it sounds like you more information to come later too. Great. Other questions for Christina or other board directors or to other staff? Yeah, go ahead.
This is just a real quick one. In the tech infrastructure, we mentioned the Midas replacement, and I think I understand what Midas is, but could you remind me?
Sure. I don't know if anybody on that. So Midas is a product that we bought in 2001. Tells you what how long the technology has been around, and it's been unsupported for several years. But what it does is manages our bid system for our bus operators for their work bids and their scheduling. So it's a software that operations specifically uses to create the work and the bid for bus operators.
So is there another system that the paratransit people use for
separate
managing theirs? It's the same one?
Separate system. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for that question, Don. Jess, yes, go ahead.
I just noticed last year on the CIP, when we met at this time, there was some unfunded priority made towards, there was U of O station and Amazon station. It was tier three funding, but it was sort of slated for in the vicinity of 2025, 2026. Just wondering, you know, what the process was for sort of whether it's a reallocation of funds or a re-strategy, like revising what the direction is. Where did that go?
I guess, Joe again. So we did take a different strategy with those anticipated needs in the long term, the 5-8 and 10-year kind of realm. And so actually there's a line under, where did you want to putting it? That's under FTN actually. Excuse me. But we wound up bundling those so they didn't have all these different stations. And we called it facility and station upgrades. So it's about the fourth line down on the facilities improvement. And so you'll see in FY 27, 28, 29, 30, et cetera, some high dollar values. And that's intended to be placeholders for anticipated station rebuilds or relocations. And so we're talking about, I think you mentioned the Amazon station was one that's going on 40 years old. So we know that that's coming to the end of its life, just physically, but also from always serving the district in terms of service. And so we know that's out there, and that's an example of just putting a placeholder in for things like that. And we bundled those, like I said, in to that one line. So they're there, but they're bundled. That makes sense.
Yes, thank you.
You bet.
Oh, Joe, you should stay up there because I think I have a question for you next. If there's anyone else. not so fast.
Just, you know what?
Yeah.
Next year, start with fleet. Go for it.
I had a question about the alternative fuels infrastructure. I'm assuming that means electric. I was curious why it was being called alternative fuels, or maybe there is other fuel.
Because we don't know for sure, actually. So it could be one of several things. And so, as Christina mentioned, we're still working on that procurement plan and the eventual type of energy and drivetrain that we want to use. Matt's can talk to that procurement plan, but we're still not quite there to a decision point. So the dollar value you see in there is the highest improvement that we might make, which I think was related to fuel cell, hydrogen, excuse me.
Yeah. This might be a question for either of you two, as we procure more electric buses, as that also follows with more infrastructure to charge them as well?
It would, yeah. Yeah, and so more of the same of what we did, right. If that's where we want to go.
Right.
I don't know, I'm going to speak to that
Is that part of the CIP or is that completely separate? You got out.
But yeah, I think that's a big question. I think the board is, when you were on it, actually, Carl kind of identified what a fleet procurement plan and what our goals are for a climate action policy statement. Right now, electric buses aren't at the capacity we need, as Jess alluded to earlier about range on MX. We just aren't there yet. So as you're looking at what does that do, we've looked at hydrogen. That's an option for a zero tailpipe emissions. There are also renewable natural gas. That's another option. So the facilities project that's associated with that is knowing that we will have to build some sort of infrastructure. It really depends on what pathway we go and then how we serve the community and what propulsion we choose to go after. Does that make sense?
At some point, range becomes a problem because it's not a one-to-one trade-off for buses. So, you know, for what we can get out of our diesel fleet, at some point it takes 1.5 electric buses to get the range you get out of a diesel. And so, you know, so we really have to be thoughtful about what the future looks like in terms of our propulsion systems. Hydrogen, you can get pretty much, you can get, I think, more than you can out of a diesel bus as far as range goes. And so there's a lot of experimentation going on in hydrogen, and several agencies have completely committed to hydrogen going forward. So, you know, we don't want to lock ourselves into any long-term decision as far as propulsion system going to this time until we get more data.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Yes, go ahead, Gary.
I got this 3 or 4 days ago, so I have an advantage. And more questions.
You expect nothing less.
Anyway, specifically, a lot of these are placeholders that you have is in the later years and whatnot. The one specifically I would ask you about is the OC training and lounge.
OCC,
12.48.
Yes, sir.
Operation Command Center.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And it shows here that, is that two? Your funding?
It's in this year, next year, primarily.
Okay. Help me understand what that means, because as I read in here, it talks about different things, and it says and amenities. And I'm going, okay, there's lots of things that are amenities.
Sure.
But I just, to help me understand that what that is, because how many buses are we running now versus how many buses were running 20 years ago or 10 years ago, that type of thing.
Anyway. Right. Sure. So I'll speak to, generally to it, but if you want, Todd is actually the PM, the project manager, and he can give you some more detail as to the project and where we are in the process, if you like. But generally speaking, it's a remodel of the whole operations wing. So this facility is over 30 years old, and we did do business differently back then. And we've been kind of slapping it together over the last few years as technology and just the way the business processes are in operations. And so the building needs to match today's processes, and both in technology and like the training equipment and whatnot that's out there now. And so big part of it is the training piece of it. We don't really have a training room for operations. And then the other piece is a dispatch center that incorporates public safety and the on-road dispatching into one space. Right now, we're actually separated downtown and here. They'll bring it together with today's technology. Yeah. And then a lot of it is employee-centric and focused. And so space for operators to have where they take their breaks, where they have their personal items, redo all the restrooms. In today's standards and requirements, that's the bulk of it. I don't know if Todd, you want to add anything to that? This is Todd Smith. He's going to be our project manager for that project. He can probably fill in a lot.
Hi, everyone.
Yeah, Todd. One of the things I was wondering about, because you helped me with some of my questions in terms of the fact that you're moving some other operations in here and whatnot. And I know that, you know, we've been running Well, a few years ago, we were running around 100 buses, 110, something like that.
We're never up around.
Are we running about that many buses now?
I believe that that's the
we're
same
actually fewer
number.
Than that now, Gary. Right
a little
now,
bit
right?
fewer
buses.
Okay.
But
okay.
Because we're not up to pre-COVID levels yet.
Okay. Yeah, that. But I just was looking at that in terms of, you know, you've helped me understand a lot. I always look at how much a square foot. I'm not sure you can use that here because there's a lot of different things there that it's not clean. It's messy.
Lots of different kinds of spaces.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, that's Todd's expertise in all of this.
And that's the, you know, if you're talking about bathrooms, the cost per square foot, your MEP is pretty high.
Yeah. And a lot of technology upgrades too that, you know, just
work. And that's because you had another item in here on the technology, and that was what'd you call
yeah,
it?
The IT infrastructure.
Yeah, that was the other. But you've got a technology
separate from this.
Okay. All right. That helps. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, just to give you a little square footage number, we are looking at scoping around a 7,000 square foot addition with the renovation of about 7,000.
Are you seeing another 70,000 square feet above what you currently have?
7,000.
7,000.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot of
difference. Yeah. That's because there's just not enough room to bring the training back over here.
Well, that's the thing that when you said that, I all of a sudden go, okay. Yeah. That makes a difference.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, anyway.
I'll just mention one other. Really, I didn't say it's almost it. One other great goal of the particular project is actually to bring the whole organization together. Right now, the building doesn't help because it actually physically separates the administrative from the operations side. So the projects here is intended actually to help pull that together.
Going to fill this in?
Those connections better.
Are you going to fill this in behind us?
Well, we're not going to do that. But we're going to create spaces for people. To
connect. Sure. Yeah. Gotcha. Thank you.
Great. Any other questions? Just making sure for my online folks, just checking in with Jess, Pete, and Steve. Yeah, go ahead. Steve and then Jess.
Steve, yeah, go.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Good. Just a general, really high altitude question. I was interested in my first look at this about your 5 strategic areas of focus and the 7 criterion for the projects, which were useful and helpful and a good filter, I think. My question is, how often do you look at those and reevaluate those? Do you do that every 5 years, 10 years, or ever? I'm just curious about that.
Christina waved me in. So the staff looks at this particular plan at least twice a year. All right, yeah. So we reevaluate, I think, that connection that, to those values that you mentioned, as well as just looking at the numbers again. So it gives us a crack at it a couple times a year.
Yeah, that was not quite what I appreciate you do it regularly. How often do you look at those actual criteria and themselves?
Yes, so those are part of our strategic plan, and we actually just looked at those and developed those last year. And okay. So we're in the process now of reviewing our current strategic plan and making sure that things are still where we want them, and we will look at it annually. So
they're pretty new and fresh right now.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Go ahead, Jess.
Yep, just a question about tech and infrastructure. I don't know a lot of these abbreviations and acronyms on here. So I wanted to inquire if there was anything and what or how much was related to anything in the realm of fare collection or fare management in boarding.
Cosette gets her turn.
Hi, thanks. I'm Cosette and I'm the interim. Heavy on the interim IT director. So Jess, that's a great question. We do have some projects here in terms of
integrated fare collection system. So we're looking to have some fare collection system using our current fare collection system, looking to integrate with other systems. So we have, other programs like Link Lane. We have other fare systems at other agencies that we're looking to link up to. So really intending to make that first and last connection easier. So you don't actually have to have two different mobile apps, for instance. You'd be able to use one mobile app for a continuation of a service. So that would be one thing. We do have our mobile wallet and our integrated trip planner. So we're right now in the process of the integrated trip planner portion of it. Right after that, we have a project to develop an integrated mobile wallet, which really is a partnership between the City of Eugene and the University of Oregon, looking to create really something of a mobile wallet that people would be able to utilize to not only pay for their bus fare, but they'd actually be able to use bike share using that same wallet, and they'd be able to pay for their parking using that same wallet. And again, it's really looking to connect the total transportation network beyond just the bus. So looking for opportunities to connect to other systems. So Jess, were there other projects that you were interested in?
Well, I guess I'm just wondering, like, would that be listed as one of the line items on the tech and infrastructure state of good repair? Like what, where and how much are we looking at? And I guess specifically, I'd like to start thinking about like how much money we are investing in collecting fares and how people pay fares versus how much that's worth to us. And I know we've been through that, or the directors have been through that, I guess. It's just like, we're spending money to integrate mobile wallets and so forth, but looking at the big picture, you know, if we're not bringing in that much through fares, what's fiscally worth it? Is it better to not have all that stuff? And I just wanted to sort of put that idea out there and say it in the meeting, but it's hard for me to tell from the CIP what specifically and how much is going to these items. I can't suss it out because I don't know what everything means.
Sure. So Jess, if you look at page 24, we have the STIF mobile wallet trip planner. So that's a project that is primarily funded through our STIF funds. So that would be our state funds. And that's the mobile wallet trip planner that I had mentioned earlier. Again, as I mentioned, we're in the process right now. We just got our contract. We're just about to kick off the trip planner portion of it. And again, prior to actually launching the mobile wallet portion of it, we'll be taking another look at that to make sure that it makes sense. We want to have those dollars programmed. Again, that's a collaboration with the City of Eugene and the University of Oregon. And we continue with that partnership around the conversations about what that looks like and how that would work. So if you look at that, we have federal funds of 600,000. We have STIF funds of 567. So that would be the mobile wallet trip planner.
But beyond that, we have an ongoing discussion actually about our fare, our current vending machines, ticket vending machines on our MX, because they're pretty expensive to keep up. And so we're really taking a look at, our complete fare structure. And, we did buy recently our automated fare system, where your cell phone or card, tap cards, and that's been pretty successful. The most expensive thing we do is keep up our vending machines and collect cash. I mean, because cash is a small part of our revenue, but it is expensive to manage. So we're currently under discussions on how we move forward with our fare structure.
Thank you. I would say specifically with the UMO app, we can provide some information on that in terms of what it costs us versus what we collect. Keeping in mind that it actually enables us to manage a lot of the programs that are special programs. So our K-12 programs and our low-income programs and our honored rider programs for folks who are 65 and older, it allows us
to not just manage them, but to, in a very accessible way, get them pushed out into the community and make them useful for folks. And I would say in general, when you look at electronic fare collection systems, the one that we have today is not a high-end one. It's a low to medium, you know, end one in terms of price, but I think in terms of the bang for the buck, it's pretty darn good.
Yeah, if I can add to that, Jess, I'm glad you brought this topic up because I think it's good for the directors to hear this talk. In fact, it reminds me of what I used to say a lot from basically 2013 to 2021, because I think the other thing I don't want to lose sight of is that while a policy discussion by the board about fares and fare policy is good, let's not forget that one of the benefits of UMO and the app is that it also helps us understand where our ridership is going. And that was something that I learned from the board. I thought was a very valuable lesson. It's like, it's great to think about how are you collecting fares, but it's really also good to know how are your riders using the service. And it really does take something like, even if you did go, you know, quote unquote, fareless or very reduced fare, I imagine LTD would probably still implement something like UMO just so they know, where's everyone going? You know, what are they doing with our passes? And if you think about it, especially if you have it on your phone, it is the one way that LTD stays literally with you, even if you're not on the bus. And so it's something you can, you know, reload anywhere and plan your trips and et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of utility, but that's something for the board. I think it's, oh, go ahead.
I didn't mean to open a can of worms about it. I understand all the data collection and so forth, and I see the value in that. I mean, there's certainly riders who are, you know, who are always going to pay in cash, and you're never going to collect the data on them. But anyway, just to sort of, I wanted to shine a light on how much we're really spending, or and how much we have and will spend over, say, a 5-year period on fare collection, and you know, how much is the data worth and how can we collect the data maybe but consider how much we're spending to collect money. So anyway.
That's fair. It does relate. Thank you very much for that. I have one more question, but I want to see, just check in Gino, Caitlin, Don, go ahead.
Well, just to follow through on what Mark and Cosette just said about the MX fare collection, is there a timeline on replacing those the MX vending machine?
Not a precise one. You know, we're still in discussion. You know, we're looking at putting the validators for our UMO pass on MX, and so that's kind of our next step. And then we'll evaluate it once those are on and kind of decide where we need to go from there.
We're also looking at what others in the industry are doing. So there are others that are doing it different than, for instance, our ticket vending machines. So.
Going to Seattle.
Yeah.
Check in with Jason, Susan, and Michelle. Any questions or comments from you?
I mean, just to go along with what Jess was saying, is there any, been conversations about going cashless, because if it's expensive to
fareless,
or no, not fareless, but cashless. I think there's always got to be a buy-in to people, you know, in terms of fare, but like,
yeah, we've actually had the discussion quite some time, and you know, we're getting closer because our UMO app actually you can purchase one-time fares or day passes at outlets.
Yeah.
So they could pay cash there, and but when they get on the bus, have the ticket. And I don't know how many outlets do we have that do that or looking at.
How many have? I think it's about 80 outlets.
Yeah.
So we're actually doing an analysis of where those outlets are in relationship to the MX stops. So again, there's some Title VI, issues
Title
that we want
to civil rights.
Yeah, we want to take a look at. So what we know is we serve many people who are unbanked. So we want to make sure that there is a location close by to the MX stops for people to go and purchase fares, and they can purchase them on their UMO app using cash. And again, with the new UMO income system, a lot of the businesses in our community and a lot of them are centrally located. So they are located near
an MX stop. We're just still doing the analysis on, is that enough? Again, because we don't want to exclude people or create barriers, especially for people who don't have any other way of purchasing those fares.
Yeah, great feedback for the board. Susan, go ahead.
I'm curious, is not having a smartphone a limitation? It seems to me that for some of the more vulnerable population, they don't necessarily have a smartphone. And being someone of a certain age, I have to say, sometimes so much technology is a barrier.
Yes, so for sure, Susan, and that's why we have the tap card as an alternative. So it's the same system. It would be the same account. And you have a choice to use the more low-tech tap card or the more high-tech smartphone. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's adaptable to the person who's using it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Great. Anything for me, Michelle? I just want to say I really appreciate that Eugene Station is getting a refresh and that it looks like, according to the CIP, maybe later this decade, Springfield Station will follow as it's a newer station. So it sounds like all that's on track. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Great. Oh, great. With that, if there are, yes, go ahead, Gary. Yeah.
I really appreciate Jessica's comments. And I'm thinking of it because one of the things that I got going through here is the difference between need and want. And I would really, encourage the board to look at that, because there's certain things in here in some of the discussion, it was very helpful on that, but I can see the need and want thing, and just to balance that some way. So thank you, Jessica.
Great, thanks, Gary. If there are no more questions, then this is the point of the meeting where I will entertain a motion. Yes,
I have a question follow up to Gary.
Please do.
How soft is some of the funding? And I guess I'm thinking about as we look at potential inflation,
so
et cetera. I mean, are we vulnerable in any of those areas? Are we being overly optimistic?
I think the year one and two, we're pretty solid on our funding. After that, we're being optimistic. And that's why we revisit in the budget every year to make sure, are we still on track? Can we still accomplish what we want within the funds that we have? And it goes through the budget process. So, but usually in the CIP, years one and two, the funding is pretty solid. When it gets out beyond that, it's a little more dicey.
When you say pretty solid, what does that mean in terms of percentage and numbers?
Well, so if you look at the tiers that we have, tier one is the funding is there, it's solid. Tier two, we know we can get the funding, so we just haven't applied for it yet. And then tier three are all, we're not sure that we can get funding, so.
Great. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Susan.
When you say you know you can get the funding, is that like?
So we've got there. So in the federal process, there's formula funds that we know we can get every year, and we can allocate those in certain ways. And so a lot of that, and then we've got stiff funds, which are state funds, and we know how much we're getting there in at each biennium. So those are guaranteed funds that just haven't been allocated yet, or.
So would that put that into tier one then?
Yeah, they move from tier two to tier one, correct.
But they're still in tier two at this point.
Correct, the ones that are,
And Jess, I see you, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask or encourage one of the comments that I've heard from bus drivers was about needing to use the restroom during their shift. And some stations sort of just, I think it maybe was at Gateway, I could be misremembering, but them having to like leave the bus and go into the mall or something like that. If we're modernizing stations, I wanna highly encourage driver bathrooms to be included in all those stations that they might need. That's all.
I saw head nods, so that was either so noted or it was already part of the plan. Go for it. Go ahead.
Yeah, just so back to your earlier question about those bundled station improvements. So that's where that would occur. And depending on what the service design is, and if we're breaking people on the periphery of the community, then yeah, absolutely those needs for restrooms at those neighborhood stations would be included in those.
Yeah, at the gateway, I think is what I think I remember it, but I could be incorrect in the,
yeah,
the gateway bathroom.
For sure, and south of town and even East Springfield could potentially be another one, depending on, again, what the service design looks like in those out years.
Yeah, to really think about the driver's needs as well as the rider's needs at those stations on the fixed routes.
Anything else to add to that? Yeah.
Great. I would be surprised if most of the board or the committee would support that suggestion. So great. All right. With that, I will entertain a motion.
I move to forward the proposed fiscal year 2023-2032 community investment plan as presented to the board of directors for recommendation for approval.
So Don Norda has moved. Do I have a second?
Second.
Michelle Weber has seconded, and we'll go ahead and do a roll call vote. I'm going to start with the people. Oh, yes, go ahead.
More comments?
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. Go ahead, Gary.
My concern is the general fund.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here looking at high unemployment today, but remembering 08, 09, 010, where we were 15% unemployment in this area, not nationwide, but downtown River City. And looking at those things and the potential of that, and that's why I that balancing that general fund money with the stuff that you've got, you know, and whether it just a little scary, you know, and it's something that for the board, it's, you know, it's a tough decision, but you got to look at it and keep track of it. But I'm amazed that the matches are where they're at, because I really didn't think, you know, 4 years ago, I would have guessed that they would have been close to the 60, 70, 80%, not 90, 95. So that's wonderful. I mean, that's fortunate, but that's a real concern. And I concerned about your general fund, and I think of some properties that you have that you are definitely excess, that maybe you can help yourselves on your general fund, because it seems like that might be something you'd want to do. Anyway, thank you.
Just one comment about that, Gary, is that in 2017, a transportation bill, which set up the STIF funds, was really helpful for us when it came to matching federal dollars, because those are state funds that we can use to match federal dollars, and we can set our general fund aside and use it for operations.
So. A little bit more protected.
Yep.
The sustainability is a big issue.
Absolutely.
It feels a little funny.
And Gary, if it gives you any comfort, you know, we do have a goal of greater than 70% of all of our projects in our community investment plan that they're funded by grants as opposed to the general fund.
70.
Mm-hmm. And that's the minimum, right? So our goal is, but we try to do better than that, and we monitor that. And then in addition to that, the other thing that I do is make sure that we set aside a match for the projects that are in play. So when you see the budget, the transfers that we have, that we transfer from the general fund to the capital fund, is to make sure that we can match all of those projects for which we have grants. So we are making sure that we're not going to run out of money to match something that we have a grant for. And so we're doing all of those things to exactly what you're saying is make sure that we have protection of our general fund. And then we on this, another side is that we have reserves now, which we didn't have when you were on the board. And so we do have a sustainable services reserve to make sure that we protect our services as well. So we are looking out for the general fund, and we're looking out for continuity of our service for our passengers.
Gordon, thank you.
Thanks, Gary and Christina. Just want to check with everyone to make sure any final comments, persuasive statements you want to make, either for or against the motion. Okay, not seeing any. I'll go ahead and go do a roll call vote. I'm going to start with people online first. Jess Roschak.
Yes.
Yes. Pete Knox.
Aye.
And Stephen Wheeler.
Aye.
Great. I'm going to move on to the people in the room. Susan Cox.
Aye.
Michelle Weber.
Aye.
Don Norden.
Aye.
Jason Williams.
Aye.
Caitlin Vargas. Gary Wallish.
Aye.
And Gino Grimaldi.
Yes.
And I, Carl Ye, vote aye. So motion passes. So we will be forwarding this on to the board of directors with the recommendation for approval. I want to say thank you so much. It's really good to be back. I have to tell you, I've took my retirement from LTD very seriously. And so it is good to be back and good to see lots of familiar, friendly faces. And thank you, Mark, for leading this organization during this time. And thank you, all the volunteers who make up for the committee to make that makes possible. And of course, the board of directors who volunteer all their time to direct LTD. And so thank you, everyone. Pleasure to be here. Thank you, everyone online. And with that, I, what is it called when you adjourn the meeting?
One more.
Are you retired again? Yes, go ahead, Don.
I just want to commend Christina and her staff. I really feel like the material is presented.
She's been fighting a cold all week, so
oh. You did a great job. We couldn't even tell. Good job, Christina. Thank you. Yes, we echo that compliment. And with that, I adjourn this meeting. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.